Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. Now, if you're a regular listener to this show, you'll be aware that UBS is interested in addressing the big questions that shape our world. To help best answer them, they sought out a number of Nobel laureates in the economic sciences to ask them to share their insights, discuss their research, and open their ever-inquiring minds. This week, we're fortunate enough to hear from one such. Oliver Hart, the Andrew E. Fuhrer Professor of Economics at Harvard University and 2016 Nobel Prize recipient. Hart is a great believer in the power of economists to provide answers to the most pressing global questions. And in a recent paper written with Luigi Zingales, Hart maintained his focus of late on the theme of corporate social responsibility. I'm delighted to say that Oliver Hart joins us now. And I'd like to start, Professor Hart, by asking about how this recent work fits into your life's practice, that for which you're most celebrated, themes like the theory of the firm and contract theory.
I think it's worth pointing out that actually I started on a topic like this. My work over the last 30 odd years has been on incomplete contracts and the boundaries of the firm. But you can see that as part of the theory of the firm. And the theory of the firm also includes the question of what should firms be doing? What is an appropriate objective function for a firm? What should they be maximizing? And that is something that I actually started working on longer ago in my PhD thesis. At that time, there was a literature on the topic. People had realized that the bottom line wasn't the only important thing for firms, that owners of firms might have broader objectives. They focused on the following kind of question. If you're an owner of a firm, maybe you also consume the firm's product, in which case you might want the firm to charge a lower price rather than just going for money. You could be an owner of a firm who also works in the firm, so you might be interested in the firm treating its workers well rather than just being interested in the bottom line. These were the kinds of issues that people focused on then. There was less interest at the time in a firm's impact on the environment, and that's what distinguishes my early work on this topic from what I've done recently in a paper with Luigi Zingales. So there we've really become interested in this environmental issue. Related to that, let me mention that sort of about the same time as this early literature, which didn't really concern itself with the environment, there was a famous article by Milton Friedman published in, of all places, the New York Times Sunday magazine. It wasn't about the environment, actually, but it was about the social impact of companies. And at the time, CEOs were saying, I think his article was 1970, CEOs were talking about the broader impact of what they were doing. And they were saying it was important for firms not just to consider profits, but also consider their impact on the community. And they were particularly interested in the idea of charitable contributions. So firms at that time were giving money away to charities, and CEOs were saying this was a great thing. And Milton Friedman argued against this in this New York Times article. He said this was completely wrong and that firms should focus on profit. I think, you know, some people have paraphrased his article to say the business of business is business or should be business. And his argument was the following. He said, think of a company that has profit. It could give it to charity, or it could hand it out to shareholders, its owners, in the form of a higher dividend. And then they could, if they like, give to charity. And he thought that was far preferable. So Friedman was not saying that charity is a bad thing. He was just saying that he didn't think companies had a comparative advantage in giving to charity. It would be better to let the individual owners decide. And as I say, if the firm simply hands out the increased profit in the form of dividend, then each shareholder can decide on his or her favorite charity, as opposed to if the firm does it, it's probably going to go to the CEO's favorite charity, which may be something completely different. So I think Friedman's argument was very powerful, but it was about charitable contributions, which is only one example of something that a firm can do to affect society. So what Luigi Zingales and I have done in our recent paper, and we're not the first to point this out, what I'm about to describe, but I think perhaps we do it in a somewhat sharper way than people before us. So what we say is that the thing about charitable contributions is they are completely separable from the business of the company. The company makes money, and then completely separately, it can decide whether to give to charity or whether to hand the money to shareholders and let them give to charity. But there are lots of other examples where you don't have that separability. One example would be pollution. So think of a company that has a choice of technologies, a dirty technology, which is going to do some environmental damage, or a clean technology, which is not. But suppose the dirty technology is more profitable. Now, if you try to apply the Friedman argument to that case, you realize immediately that it doesn't work, because Friedman would have to argue. He didn't consider this case, and he's no longer with us, so we can't ask him. But I think what he would have to argue is that the company should choose the dirty, more profitable technology, hand the extra money in the form of dividends to the owners, and then if they individually want to clean up the mess the company's made, let them do it. But as soon as you say that, you realize it's a crazy argument, because the cost of cleaning up the mess might far exceed the additional profit you got from being dirty in the first place. In other words, if the shareholders really care about the mess, they would actually prefer the company not to create it in the first place. And that's exactly the kind of situation that Luigi Zingales and I consider in our recent paper. And we think there are lots of situations like that, and that because those situations are actually quite common, the received wisdom that companies should pursue the bottom line and leave social elements, social goals, social considerations to individuals and to government, that received wisdom we think is wrong, because what companies do can be inextricably linked to the social things that the owners care about, as in my dirty technology versus clean technology example.
Oliver Hart, let's move on and maybe next talk a little about sustainability, about this notion of companies making a positive impact. Do firms today care more than they used to, or do they care differently perhaps? And I wonder, are companies genuinely invested in this? Is it a phase or a trend, some cynics suggest?
I actually think it is not a passing phase, because I think this whole idea that other things matter is in the air, and I don't think it's just going to disappear. I think you could say it's partly because of young people. Millennials seem to care more about these things than perhaps people used to. But I also think that intellectually things have changed a bit. I don't want to say it's because of my article with Luigi. That would be nice, but very unlikely to be true. But I think a lot of people are talking in similar ways about this, recognizing that shareholders are ordinary people, and ordinary people are not purely self-interested. They care about things like climate change. And B, that there's no reason why, given that these shareholders shouldn't try to influence what companies are doing. And related to that, companies should actually be interested in what their owners want and try to actually find out what they want. So I just think that this is now being recognized in a way that it wasn't before. If you like Milton Friedman's argument, even though people may not have realized always that it was him, and in fact it wasn't just him, that was the received wisdom. He wasn't the only person saying that you could kind of separate the corporate sector from everything else and just let companies focus on the bottom line. And then, as I think it's important to understand this perspective, it's not saying that pro-social behavior isn't desirable. It's saying that's the province of individuals and the government. Companies don't need to worry about it. But I think increasingly it's being realized that this separation isn't right, that it doesn't exist. And once one realizes that, then attitudes are going to change. So I don't think it's just a passing phase. Many CEOs buy into the idea of corporate social responsibility. But when you hear them talking about it, they tend to present it as a win-win situation. So they basically say, you know, as the head of a company, I need to be concerned with the impact of my company on consumers, on workers, on the local community, because if we have a positive impact, then people are going to think well of us, they're going to write nice things in the newspapers, and people are going to want to buy our product, they're going to want to work for us. And conversely, if we don't treat our consumers well, if we don't produce safe products, we're going to have a bad reputation and nobody's going to buy our stuff. And the conclusion is that being nice is good for the bottom line. Being not nice is bad for the bottom line. So it's kind of win-win. We need to be concerned about these other things because these days consumers are much savvier, and so they're going to know about the products they're buying and who made them, and that's why we have to make sure that they're nice, clean products. I have no objection to that argument, but if that's all there is to it, then there's absolutely no trade-off. You want to be good because being good allows you to make more money. I think there's certainly something to that. Sometimes that is the right story, but there are also going to be situations where it's not like that. My example of the choice between the dirty technology and the clean technology is an example where you really have a choice. The dirty technology is more profitable. Maybe we're talking about a situation where consumers are not going to know about this or not going to care about it. We can't always assume that consumers are going to stop buying a good product just because the company caused some pollution, maybe in a country far away. We might be talking about something which is quite obscure. So in a situation like that, it really could be the case that doing the profitable thing is actually doing the antisocial thing. And so you have to, if you want to be pro-social, if you want to be environmentally friendly, then you need to give up some money. Those are the cases, I think, that are really interesting intellectually. And that's where you have a real conflict. And then the question is, Luigi's and my view is, well, you need to ask the shareholders. They might be willing to make that choice, make that trade-off, give up the money for the betterment of the world.
Well, Oliver, let's look at that world and some maybe contrasting global dynamics. What about potential geographical differences? If we're talking about ESG themes, depending on where you are, for example, to compare the US, where you're sat right now, with, say, here and the European perspective, there's a feeling that Europe is maybe ahead or more in tune with this narrative. What about differences, Oliver, in terms of geography?
They certainly exist. Tom, you have suggested that this movement has been more successful, more popular in Europe, and I think that's true. But it's making inroads in the US. There's a lot of talk about it in the US as well. And you often find that something starts in one place and then it's taken up elsewhere. And I think that's happening here. I certainly think it's quite likely that countries at a lower stage of development, I mean, with lower GDP, maybe they're going to be less interested in it at this point. Maybe it's a bit of a luxury to be concerned with the environment. But at the same time, take a country like China, their environmental concerns are very important. And so I could imagine these ideas catching on there quite soon.
Oliver Hart, I did want to ask you before we wrap this up about whether the influences we've been talking about, these background factors and developments, are driving real change. Are we seeing real enduring shifts in people's attitudes, both towards the environment, what their expectations of companies, businesses are? I mean, I guess this comes back to the suspicion in some quarters about ESG themes maybe being a phase. You've already described very articulately your belief that attitudes have shifted. But I know you also believe that technology is an absolutely critical factor here.
Technology makes some things possible that were not possible even very recently. I've just read about an American company that has some app which allows people to vote on corporate matters. I think just by swiping, you can vote on something. Now, you know, if you think about the way people have traditionally voted on corporate matters in the past, it's all quite complicated and you have to, you know, read a lot of documents and do things by mail, and that can be quite off-putting. If you have something like this, an app, and if perhaps the issue can be explained in very simple language and it's not bundled together with all sorts of boring accounting issues, then I think you can imagine people may be willing to take the time to actually act. And so these kinds of changes in technology can make things possible and attractive that were impossible, unattractive before. They also, by the way, make it easier for companies to consult with shareholders. So we think that in this new world, it's not just that shareholders should try to influence companies, but it's also that companies should be really interested in trying to find out what their owners want, how they trade off ESG goals against profit.
Indeed. Well, it just remains for us to thank you, Oliver Hart, Professor of Economics at Harvard University, winner of the 2016 Nobel Prize in Economic Sciences, for sharing your insights, your Nobel perspectives with us on the Bulletin with UBS. To read more from and about Oliver and to discover how Nobel perspectives shape the UBS worldview, head to ubs.com and search Nobel Perspectives. You can listen again, as always, and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.